So, you have a movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's called Elf.
Oh, smart. Lord of the Rings is super hot right now. So who's this tall, good-looking elf man?
I was thinking that loud SNL guy, Will Ferrell.
What? Yes, he actually has nothing to do with Lord of the Rings. It's a Christmas movie.
Oh, he's a Christmas elf.
Well, kinda. See, he was a baby at an orphanage being cared for by this old nun, and then he sneaks into Santa's bag and ends up in the North Pole.
So Santa just headed directly to the North Pole after visiting that specific orphanage and never looked in his bag again?
That's what we're going with.
So then one of the elves volunteers to raise him, so he's raised as an elf.
Oh my god.
What?
Well, that poor old nun lady.
What are you talking about?
They're not even gonna attempt to bring this baby back to the orphanage.
No.
So for the rest of her life, she's gonna be haunted by the thought that from her perspective, a child was stolen on her watch, never to be seen again.
Ooh! Right.
This is off to a dark start.
I mean, now that you mention it, yes, it definitely is. But we could pretend like it's not, maybe?
That works for me. I love pretending.
So they think his name is Buddy because that's what was written on his diaper. But when he grows up, he doesn't really fit in with all the elf stuff, you know, like the elf showers, and he can't keep up with anyone's magical powers.
So what does he do?
Well, his adoptive father shows him a picture of his birth parents and tells him that his dad is living in New York City.
Did that nun leave a photo of his parents in his diaper to get pooped on?
I guess so. So Santa sends him off to NYC to find his dad, but warns him to not check out any peep shows.
What was that?
So he goes to see his dad, Walter, but it doesn't really go well, so he wanders into the Gimbel's department store and gets mistaken for one of the elves working in the fake Santa village.
Okay.
And he sees a beautiful employee, Jovi, and becomes infatuated with her.
Oh, I guess he wasn't attracted to little elves, but now that he sees a human woman, he's aroused for the first time.
Well, that's not a cute way to put it.
Well,
anyway, so the next morning she's showering at work and he enters the room and starts singing along with her, which freaks her out.
Oh, God. Well, yeah, that's super creepy and intrusive of him.
Well, he says he didn't know she was naked in the shower.
But you said they had showers in the North Pole. How could he not know?
Hey, shut up. So then Buddy freaks out because he sees that the mall Santa isn't the real Santa and they fight and he goes to jail.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, and so Walter reluctantly bails him out and brings him to a pediatrician to get a DNA test to see if he's really his.
Doesn't it take multiple days to get results from those?
No, this is one of those pediatricians that's set up for instant DNA testing.
That's not a thing.
But it might be.
It isn't.
So the doctor tells Walter that the best thing he could do is bring this fully grown man who thinks he's an elf and has just been arrested for a violent crime into his home to meet his wife and his child.
This guy's not a real doctor.
Well, yeah, no, he's gonna be played by an actor.
Never mind.
So Buddy hangs out with the family and shows off his ability of somehow not being dead from diabetes.
And Walter's wife is just fine with this?
Yes, because if she wasn't immediately super cool with it, then I'd have to spend time on that, and I don't wanna!
Got it.
And then he accidentally shows her his genitals.
Accidentally? First the shower, now this?
Yes, and now Buddy wants to connect with his half-brother Michael, but Michael thinks he's a weirdo.
I kinda do too.
But then he shows off his superhuman snowball throwing skills in Central Park, and they become friends.
I thought Buddy didn't have magic elf powers.
Oh, yeah. Well, in this scene, he does.
Oh, okay.
So they head over to Gimbel's, even though he got a restraining order, and he asks that girl Jovi out on a date.
I mean, he thinks he's an elf. He snuck into the bathroom while she was showering. He went to jail for a violent crime, and now he's defying a restraining order. It's gonna be tough to get her to go out with him.
Actually, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's the main character, so it's charming, so she's gonna say yes.
Oh, okay, great.
Yeah, the movie's called Elf, and he is the elf, so he's going to be desirable.
That makes sense, yeah.
So anyway, eventually, Buddy really pisses his dad off by accidentally making fun of a man with dwarfism.
Oh, my God.
So Buddy's all sad and depressed, and he walks up onto the Queensboro Bridge.
Is he gonna frickin' jump?
No, he's just gonna kinda sadly look at the water, but then he's gonna see frickin' Santa Claus crash into Central Park, so he's gotta run over there.
Isn't that kind of a long run?
There's no way for me to check that, so then Walter and Michael also see the crash, so they run over as well. Now the three of them have to help Santa.
Just the three of them with Santa alone in Central Park?
Yeah, just the three of them and Santa. It's not that far-fetched.
Yes, it is.
Whoa!
That's not a reaction that makes sense to what I just said.
Well, listen, a lot of other people do see the sleigh crash, but instead of going to check it out, they all just kind of gather at the edge of the park behind a news lady who's talking about it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just a whole bunch of people standing around in disbelief, and also Josh Rubin is there. They don't know what is going on.
Who?
And it turns out there's not enough Christmas spirit anymore to make Santa's sleigh fly, because people people don't believe in him anymore.
Well, that doesn't really make sense. I mean, the parents would see gifts under the tree each year that they themselves didn't buy. Who do they think got those?
Well, listen, sir, that's a problem with every Christmas movie, not just this one, so get all the way off my back about it.
Ow! Let me get off of that thing.
So then, to get more Christmas spirit going, Jovi's gonna sing, and everybody's gonna join in.
I mean, that little crowd of people is probably not enough to make the sleigh fly.
We'll see, everybody watching the news is gonna start singing as well, like some bikers in a bar, a little girl in her bedroom on a little TV, the people back at the office on a projector.
Those sound like the last situations in which anyone would be watching the news.
Hey, shut up. So then they all start singing, and Walter's gonna join in just in the nick of time, and Santa flies right above them, and he's off to deliver gifts.
Wow, so the news reporter has a huge story on her hands. Santa just flew above her head, and there were a bunch of witnesses.
Well, no, see, she's speechless for a second, and then the news cuts back to the studio, and they say they guess they'll never know what happened and drop the story completely forever.
Why?
The movie's almost done, sir. We're not gonna open that whole can of worms.
Oh, unopened cans of worms are tight.
And so then Buddy impregnates Jovi, and we're done.
Well, it sounds like a great Christmas movie, and hey, if it does well, we can make a bunch more of them.
What could possibly stop us? So, you have a Christmas movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's gonna be about this guy named Scott Calvin who, you know, kills Santa Claus.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know, but hear me out.
Okay.
So Scott and his son Charlie hear somebody stomping around on the roof on Christmas Eve, right?
Oh, is it Santa Claus?
It is Santa Claus, and he's being real loud.
You'd think that people at other houses would have heard him too if he's so loud delivering presents.
Yeah, you'd think so, but people at other houses aren't the protagonists of this movie.
Right.
So Scott runs outside and sees Santa on the rooftop, and he thinks he's being robbed, so he kills him with a gun.
Come on, man. No, he doesn't.
Yeah, he shoots him dead.
We can't have the main character murder Santa Claus in the first act of our movie.
You guys have characters get killed in the first act all the time. I mean, why is it okay for Bambi's mom to be killed, but not Santa Claus?
Because we don't have the protagonist be the killer, like Bambi's not the one that shot his mom.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. So what if Scott just startles Santa and he falls off the roof and dies?
Still kinda responsible.
Well, Scott kinda has to be responsible, cause the whole thing is that he's gonna take Santa's place.
Is there a way we can lighten it up a little more? Maybe a little hand wave from Santa and he disappears?
Okay, yeah, sure. So we'll have Santa's dead arm reanimate for a second and then his corpse will vanish from this realm.
This is still super dark.
Now, would the hand wave be like a post-mortem spasm or is he really back from the dead?
Okay, let's just move on, please.
Well, okay then.
So what happens next? Do they call an ambulance?
Well, no, because the corpse vanished.
Right.
But we're gonna find out that if Santa Claus dies and you put on his clothes, you become Santa Claus.
Wait, that's all it takes?
Yeah, pretty crazy, right? People thought that Santa Claus was just a guy, but it turns out it's like a thing that's passed on to new hosts through magic.
But what would happen if, like, a meth head killed Santa and put on his clothes?
I guess we'd have to hope that the meth head has a lot of Christmas spirit.
I guess so.
So then Scott and Charlie are gonna deliver a bunch of presents together and then go to the North Pole.
Oh, what happens there?
Well, a bunch of elves are there and they're all like, oh, hey, I guess you're the new Santa Claus, what's up?
Don't they care that the other Santa Claus just died?
Not even a little bit.
Oh my God, I didn't know that elves were so heartless.
Yeah, it makes you realize that when Scott eventually dies, they're not gonna care either. Nothing matters to them.
Jeez, that is dark.
Yeah, well, they've been alive for so long that they clearly must not feel any attachment to human life anymore.
Why did they even make presents then?
I don't know.
And what about Mrs. Claus? She must be sad that he's dead, right?
Well, we're not gonna mention her, so either she was already dead or the elves tossed her out into the cold when the old Santa died.
Oh my Lord.
Anyway, so then Scott accidentally flirts with an elderly child and falls asleep.
What?
And then he wakes up at home and kind of brushes the whole thing off as a dream.
Okay.
But then slowly he starts to physically turn into Santa Claus.
What do you mean?
Well, like he has to go to this meeting at work in sweatpants because he suddenly gained a bunch of weight.
What's the meeting about?
It's just this meeting where they're kind of pitching Christmas ads.
Oh, pitch meetings are tight.
Yeah, and so even though his coworkers order salad, Scott orders a bunch of sweets. So that's part of his Santa transformation, just eating sweet stuff nonstop?
Yeah, because that's one of the things that people love about Santa Claus, you know? His crippling sugar addiction.
Oh, I didn't know that. So then Scott starts to put on a bunch of weight because of his horrible eating habits.
So wait, why does Santa have to be a fat guy?
Because that's what Santa looks like.
Right, but the whole thing is that Santa isn't one guy. It's a job that's passed on from person to person.
Right.
So what's the purpose of the unhealthy weight gain if it's just a job where somebody has to deliver presents?
That's just how Santa's supposed to look.
So you're changing some elements of the mythology but keeping others at random?
Oh, it's not random. It's so we can make fat jokes.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And so Charlie's mom, Laura, and her boyfriend, Neil, are on a mission to prove to Charlie that Santa's not real.
real.
Pretty mean to destroy a kid's dreams like that.
Yeah, and they're gonna make Scott lose visitation rights with his son.
Jeez, these people are awful.
Yeah.
But if Santa does exist, that means that Laura and Neil would suddenly see new presents under the tree every Christmas morning.
Yeah, well, that's not enough for them to believe in Santa, apparently.
Well, if that's not enough, it's gonna be impossible to convince them.
Actually, super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they stopped believing in Santa when they were young because they didn't get the toys they asked for, so Scott gets them those toys.
How come the Santa Claus that was in charge when they were young didn't give them what they wanted?
Maybe they had a meth addict Santa back then, I don't know.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we're also gonna have this elf Bernard that teleports into their home to get Scott and Charlie.
Wait, elves can teleport into people's homes?
Yeah, pretty cool, right?
Then wouldn't it make more sense for them to teleport inside people's homes to deliver presents?
Well, that's Santa's job, you silly producer. He flies on the sleigh and goes down the chimneys.
But I mean, why would that responsibility land on him if the elves can do it 100 times better?
I don't know.
Fair enough.
And so yeah, eventually Scott fully embraces his new job as Santa, and so does everybody else.
Wow.
So what do you think? Any thoughts on who should play Scott Calvin?
Well, ideally somebody that's kid-friendly, you know, not somebody with a dark past or anything.
Oh, I know just the guy.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, Tim Allen.
Oh yeah, he'd be great, and he's clean.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little thing where he spent 2 years in jail because he got caught with 1.5 pounds of cocaine at an airport.
What?
I was told you had a movie idea for me.
Yes, sir, I do. See, last month, my wife and my brother went on vacation together alone.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry.
No, what? Don't be sorry. They accidentally forgot me at home.
Are you sure that's what happened?
Well, yeah, of course. Why else would they not bring me on a vacation to Paris?
All right, I mean, okay.
And so, you know, I got to be home all alone.
That's great, buddy.
It was great. I ate candy, I watched movies, I went grocery shopping all by myself.
Okay, to be honest, I'm not getting what the movie idea is, and I'm getting a little sad.
Right, so I was thinking, if I'm having such an amazing time, imagine if this happened to an 8-year-old kid.
You want to make a movie where a child's wife cheats on him?
What? No, I want a kid to be accidentally left at home while his family goes on vacation.
I guess my question is, how would that ever happen?
Well, his family leaves on a vacation and they don't realize he's not with them.
Yeah, but okay, it just seems like a really, 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 really improbable thing.
Oh yeah, I'm well aware.
Okay, so?
Well, I was doing some research and there's this thing in storytelling called the suspension of disbelief.
What's that?
They say that the audience sacrifices realism and logic for the sake of enjoyment.
Oh, so the audience will kind of just overlook unrealistic things?
Right, so I think if we exploit that to like an extreme level, we're good.
Huh. Interesting.
So I think I figured out like the perfect storm of unrealistic coincidences to get this premise off the ground.
All right, you got me, I'm listening.
Okay, so first off, the kid has to be part of a huge family. Like it has to be big enough that you wonder if they've ever heard of birth control. Plus some uncles and cousins can be there too. They also all have to be really mean to the kid so he can wish that they would disappear. Then they also have to accidentally throw his plane ticket in the trash. Then they also have to make him sleep in the attic so they don't see him when they're leaving. There also has to be a huge storm the night before the departure that knocks out the phone line so they can't contact him when they're gone. That storm also has to knock out the power. That way their alarms can shut off in the night and they wake up late for their flight. Also, the kid needs to sleep so heavily that he doesn't hear 15 people running around and yelling. There also has to be a random little kid that shows up at the exact moment they're doing a head count so they can get it wrong. Then we have to have nobody think of him even a little bit until they're mid-flight.
So they really have to be like an awful family.
They have to be the worst family. Oh yeah, also then the kid has to wake up and think he's magic because he wished that they disappeared, and they did.
Wouldn't he just make the connection that they were supposed to leave on a trip that morning?
You'd think so, but if we have him not understand what an airport shuttle is, he can look at their cars and be like, there's no way they could have gotten to the airport without those. So he thinks he magically erased his family from existence?
Right.
So just to be clear, we need to have all those extremely unlikely scenarios play out one after the other just to get this kid alone at home by himself?
That's right. And this,
Suspension of disbelief.
Right, with that, people will just be okay with all of that.
Apparently, yeah.
All of that.
Yeah, pretty cool, right?
Well, then awesome.
So tell me more about this kid,
Kevin McAllister. Well, you know how his family is the worst?
Yeah, I imagine he's like the only nice one in the family.
Oh no, he's also the worst.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he calls his mom a dummy and he's really snarky with everyone. He's also unable to pack a suitcase, like it's the end of the world for him to do that.
And how does he get over the trauma of the situation?
The trauma?
Well, I mean, in Kevin's mind, he's essentially just killed his family with a wish. I imagine that's gonna be hard for him to come to terms with.
Actually, super easy, barely an inconvenience.
Really?
Well, I probably should have mentioned before that Kevin is a psychopath.
Oh yeah.
We're talking complete disregard for the physical and emotional well-being of everyone he comes across in his life. And he talks to himself, kind of a lot.
So he's happy that they're dead.
He's thrilled. He has a little eyebrow celebration thing, and then he does all the exact same stuff I did when I was home alone, except I didn't shave.
Does anything else happen, or do we just watch a kid go crazy at home by himself?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's where things get really interesting.
How's that?
Well, it turns out that two burglars have their hearts set on breaking into the McAllister house.
So why this house in particular?
One of them mentioned something about it probably having some VCRs.
VCRs are great.
And they always will be. So these guys think that the house is empty because they've been casing the joint.
Oh no.
But Kevin finds out that they want to break in.
So he calls the cops?
No. Well, eventually.
Eventually? Why not right away?
Because of the psychopath thing.
Oh, I don't get it.
Well, the bandits break in, but Kevin is like some kind of genius. Like he set up a bunch of intricate death traps that they walk into one by one.
But you said the kid was freaked out about packing a suitcase, like that was too much.
Oh, right.
And now he's like a death trap engineer?
Yeah, no, that's a mistake. I'll change the suitcase thing. That doesn't make any sense.
Meh, it's probably fine.
You sure?
Eh,
it's no problem. I could change it to something that makes the whole death trap engineer make sense.
Nah, keep the suitcase thing. It's all good.
Okay, so he's too stupid to pack a suitcase, but he's great at traps.
So what happens with the robbers?
Well, they somehow survive a bunch of very, very fatal injuries.
Wow.
Yeah, and in the middle of the robbery, it seems like they forget that they wanted to rob the house, and now they just want to murder this child.
It becomes about murder.
It seems that way. Because at a certain point, Kevin just leaves them alone in the house, and they don't take anything.
Just focused on the kid, no more VCRs.
Yep, so at the end, they get arrested because they tried to break in and murder a child. It's very dark. And then overnight, he manages to clean up all the traps, including some stairs covered in tar. And then his family comes back the next day and immediately ignore him again.
What do you think?
Well, I think it might have some potential,
but
it's missing something, some kind of big selling point.
Do you have anything in mind?
Well, we could try the Christmas play. I mean, that rarely works, but
what's that?
That's when you make a movie take place at Christmas time, even if it has almost nothing to do with Christmas time. So people think, oh, this is a Christmas movie. I have to watch it.
Exactly.
Would that work if I just add in a couple of random Christmas elements?
Well, it's certainly not going to be a Christmas classic, but it's worth a shot.
So, you have a Christmas movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's gonna be super violent.
What?
Yeah, so this New York cop, John McClane, is on his way to Los Angeles to see his wife, Holly, on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's having a tough time on the plane, so the guy sitting next to him's like, the secret to air travel is to take your shoes off later and make fists with your toes.
That's a pretty weird thing to include in a movie.
Yeah, well, I want John to take his shoes off later, because there's gonna be a whole thing with broken glass.
Can't we just have him take off his shoes while he's changing? I mean, I can't really have someone take their shoes off without some juicy backstory to it.
Fair enough.
So anyway, John gets a limo ride from this driver, Argyle, and he says he's gonna wait for John in the parking garage while he goes up to see his wife at her office Christmas party.
What kind of a company has their Christmas party on Christmas Eve?
The kind I made up for this movie.
Gotcha.
So anyway, then the whole Christmas party's gonna be taken over by this guy, Hans Gruber, and his crew of bad guys with beautiful hair.
Oh, so John sneaks down to the garage to Argyle?
No, the bad guys disabled the elevators below the 30th floor.
Oh, so does he try to get down using the stairs?
No, doesn't even try.
Why not?
Well, I mean, even if he did get down to Argyle, the beautiful haired bad guys closed the security gates.
Can't Argyle drive through the gates to go get some help?
Well, yeah, he can drive through them, but we're only gonna have him do that at the end of the movie.
Why?
Because that's what I wrote.
Fair enough.
Anyway, so this one bad guy is gonna try to track John down, but John's gonna get the drop on him.
Oh, what's he planning on doing?
Getting the guy to drop his machine gun.
And then what? I mean, he's not in a position to arrest anybody if the guy does surrender.
Well, he's gonna hit the guy on the head and wrestle with him and end up breaking his neck.
Feels like he should have just shot him in the first place when he had the chance.
Yeah, well, there's gonna be kind of a recurring thing in the movie where characters don't shoot each other at key moments when they have the chance.
How come?
Because then the movie would be over and we gotta stretch this bad boy out.
Fair enough. Stretching out bad boys is tight.
Oh, that's the worst sentence I've ever heard.
Yeah, that didn't sound right at all and I apologize.
Anyway, so then John puts the dead guy in the elevator so the other bad guys see him.
What?
Yeah, he's gonna write, now I have a machine gun on his chest. It's gonna be hilarious.
He's gonna give up the element of surprise so we can taunt them a little bit.
Well, not only that, he's also gonna eavesdrop on them and learn what their names are.
He didn't have to send them a dead body to eavesdrop on them.
Yeah, probably would have made his life easier if he hadn't done that.
Whoops.
Whoopsie. So then later this cop is gonna pass through and John has to get his attention.
Oh, and is that gonna be hard for him to do from all the way up in the building?
No, it's gonna be super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's just gonna throw the dead body of another other guy he killed onto the cop's car. Wait, now that I think of it, he could have just fired his gun to get the cop's attention.
Probably, but this guy's like really into communicating using dead bodies.
Sure sounds that way.
And then some more law enforcement's gonna show up and this police chief is gonna take over.
Oh, what's his deal?
Well, I had to make him unbelievably stupid so the movie could keep on going.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like he thinks the dead guy full of bullet holes that was thrown out the building killed himself.
It is unbelievable that a human being could be that stupid.
Well, if the law enforcement people were competent at all, the movie would end, so I kinda had to make them all into walking plot devices.
Oh, so they're all just there to make dumb decisions and pad the runtime?
Exactly. Like, some of them are gonna try to break through glass doors with a blowtorch. They're gonna be really dumb.
Wow.
But the first cop that showed up is actually a good guy.
Oh, he is?
Yeah, like when John McClane isn't talking to himself, which he does kind of a lot, he's gonna be talking to this guy.
And what's his deal?
Well, he's gonna have this backstory where he lost his cop mojo after accidentally killing a kid who was playing with a toy gun. It's gonna be really sad.
Wait, is the sad part that he killed a kid or that he lost his cop mojo?
We're certainly gonna play it like the tragedy is that he lost his cop mojo.
Interesting.
Yeah, so in the end, he's gonna have this story arc where he regains the confidence to, you know, shoot people again.
Wow, well, good for him.
We're also gonna have this whole subplot with this reporter snooping around.
Oh?
Yeah, cause this way Hans is gonna end up seeing on the news that Holly and John are married.
I mean, we can literally have that show up on the news. We don't need an entire reporter subplot.
Yes, we do.
Oh, okay then.
And so later, John is gonna be getting chased by bad guys and he's gonna cut his feet on some broken glass.
Right, he's not wearing any shoes and I know the entire history of that.
Yeah, he's gonna leave a huge trail of blood, but he's gonna end up escaping and losing the bad guys.
How does he manage to lose the bad guys if he's leaving a giant trail of blood?
I don't know. Fair enough.
And so yeah, eventually John is gonna end up killing Hans Gruber and saving the day.
Very cool. And what's this thing called anyway?
Oh, I was thinking we could call it Die Hard.
What does that mean?
Well, first of all, it sounds awesome and it vaguely describes the characters and plot, I guess.
I guess, kinda.
And it's kind of a tribute to my late uncle.
Oh, was he killed in the line of duty or something?
No, he died while testing erectile dysfunction drugs.
Oh my god.
So what do you think?
Well, I mean, it sounds great, but I don't know if I'd necessarily call it a Christmas movie, you know?
Of course it's a Christmas movie. It takes place at Christmas time.
But it doesn't have to do with Christmas other than that.
But it takes place at Christmas time.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's a Christmas movie.
Sure it does. Tell you what, let's let people debate this amongst themselves for a while before taking an official stance on it.
How long should we let them debate?
Like maybe 3 decades or something?
Sounds good to me.
So, you have a Christmas movie for me?
Yes, sir, I do. It's based on a novel by John Grisham.
Oh, I didn't know he wrote a Christmas novel. Was it well reviewed?
Not particularly, no.
Well, you know me. I refuse to learn from others' mistakes.
That's what I love about you, sir.
So what happens in this thing?
Well, there's this couple, Luther and Nora Crank, right? And their daughter is off to Peru to join the Peace Corps.
Right, okay.
So they drop her off at the airport, and then we jump right into the comedy.
Oh boy, lay it on me. I'm ready.
Okay, so Luther needs to go into this store to buy something for Nora, right? But it's pouring rain and he forgot his umbrella.
Okay, yeah.
And so he just gets all wet.
Uh-huh.
Like really, like super just all wet. Just completely wet.
Yeah, sure.
And you know, he's not happy about it being wet. He wishes he wasn't. For sure.
Sure, yeah, no, of course.
And so, you know, I gotta be honest, sir, I thought you'd be laughing by now.
Oh, that was the funny thing?
Yeah, he gets all wet.
Well, comedy's hard.
No, it's actually super easy. Barely an inconvenience.
If you say so.
I do, so we're gonna get a good 5 minutes out of that gag.
5 minutes, wow, okay, really going in on that, it's currently raining bit.
Yeah, and so Luther's gonna see an ad for a cruise, right? And then he gets the idea to skip Christmas and go on a cruise with his wife.
Well, reasonable decision, seeing as their daughter's out of the house. Is something wrong?
Yeah, if you don't mind, I'd like to pretend you didn't say that, because this whole movie depends on that being a really wacky thing to do.
Oh, okay. What? They're gonna skip Christmas?
They're gonna skip Christmas.
Wow.
Thanks for that, sir. So anyway, Luther tells his wife about the idea.
Okay.
And she's like, okay, but can we still donate to charities like we do every year? And he's like, no, this has to be a total boycott.
Why does it have to be a total boycott?
So the movie can happen.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, and so then everybody in the town is gonna find out about their plan to skip Christmas.
How do they find out?
Well, Luther writes up a letter about their intentions and shoves it in his co-workers' faces.
Oh my god, why is he being so aggressive about it?
I don't know.
So is he like the unlikable guy in this thing? Like an anti-hero?
Well, I wouldn't say that, no, because every character is unlikable.
Every character?
Every single character, sir, almost especially the protagonist.
Jeez, so there's no save the cat moment to make us empathize with him?
There's not, no. In fact, Luther keeps stepping on a cat.
Oh my god.
He also freezes it rock solid in ice.
What? Why?
Well, he iced up his entire walkway so people would fall and hurt themselves.
Oh, that's incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, head trauma's hilarious.
Yikes.
So what do these jerks get up to next?
Well, since the townspeople aren't happy about the Krang skipping Christmas, they all get together and, you know, start bullying them until they conform.
Oh my god.
Yeah, like the people that usually sell them a Christmas tree got all mad because they're not buying one.
Just no decorations?
Total boycott, sir. No decorations whatsoever, except for a big Christmas wreath on their front door for some reason.
Pretty weird and public exception to make.
And everybody wants them to put up their big frosty decoration, especially their neighbor Frohmeyer.
Really none of his business.
Well, he makes it his business. He chases down Nora's car and grabs her window.
Oh, that's straight up harassment.
Hilarious harassment. So then she rolls up her window and his gloves get caught in it. So she just screams her head off. She just loses her mind.
Okay, pretty weird reaction.
Yeah, some might say a funny reaction.
Somehow I doubt they will.
Well, so if I'm understanding correctly, this is going to be the Kranks explaining to various people that they're skipping Christmas, those people getting angry about it, and then it's on to the next scene?
Pretty much, yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
Wow.
We're also going to sprinkle some comedy bits in there.
Oh yeah, like what?
Well, they go get tans before their vacation, right? And then their priest sees them in their bathing suits.
Is that the entire joke?
That's the entire joke. And in another scene, Luther gets Botox, so he has trouble eating.
Is that also the entire joke?
That's also the entire joke, sir, and it's gone by the next scene, never to be spoken of again.
So you're just kinda doing stuff, huh?
Yeah, I'm just kinda doing stuff, I don't know.
Oh, just kinda doing stuff is tight.
So anyway, after I burn through a bunch of runtime with nothing, they're gonna get a call from their daughter.
Oh, what does she want?
Well, she's surprising them and coming home for Christmas.
Wait, didn't she just leave?
That's right, just a couple weeks earlier, but now she's coming back for Christmas.
So she spent thousands of dollars on multiple plane tickets, why not just leave after Christmas?
I don't know.
Very irresponsible spending.
Also, she's engaged now.
Sure, that may as well be a thing.
It's gonna be.
So they explain to her that they booked a cruise?
No, they lie to her.
Why?
So the movie can keep happening.
Oh, okay.
So now they have to scramble and get together a Christmas party before she gets back.
Because they couldn't help from lying to their adult daughter?
Exactly. So the whole town just gathers together because now the Kranks are ready to conform.
Wait, what's the message of this movie?
No time to think about that.
Oh, okay.
So then some cops go pick up the daughter at the airport, but then they need to stall so the conformists can prep the party.
Right.
So they pretend to be stopping a criminal, but they stumble upon an actual criminal.
Wow, what are the odds of that?
Oh, odds don't matter when I'm pulling all of this out of my-
As this cop stuff is happening, are we gonna see the party get set up too?
We sure are, sir. There's gonna be all kinds of wacky hijinks.
Oh yeah, like what?
Like the lights not working, but then being fixed.
Oh, a very fun minor obstacle.
And so they all have a nice evening, but that criminal tries to steal stuff from their house.
And not all the fully empty houses full of presents on the block.
That's right, and then as he's trying to escape, he gets hit in the head by a guy dressed as Santa.
Oh.
Yeah, and it turns out this is a guy we actually saw at the very beginning of the movie. He was trying to sell Luther an umbrella when it was raining.
Oh, I mean, okay.
It all ties together.
Yeah, I guess.
And so that's about it. We pull back to reveal that that guy actually was Santa Claus and he flies away with his reindeer.
What?
And so that's about it. What do you think?
Well, to be honest, it sounds like it's all over the place.
Just like Christmas.
That's a good point. Plus, I think if we get the secret Christmas weapon on board, it'll be okay.
What's the secret Christmas weapon?
Tim Allen. If we get him on board, everybody's gonna love this, no matter what.
Hi, this is Ryan George from The Thing You Just Watched. Please enjoy this slideshow from The Thing You Just Watched.